Hello, thank you for joining us for what should be a great game.
Fourth official couldn't allow him on because the fourth official never had cheap.
Well, he never heated up the baby, did he? Unless he's breastfeeding, he should be alright.
Hello and welcome to the football family, the 42.ie's dedicated football podcast on this FAI Cup final week. But as you can tell by my tone, there is an element of despair. Shane Keegan, not just because there's going to be a Neil Diamond themed dinner dance at Cove Ramblers at the end of the week, but he's came so close. I thought Munch just had that, he's nicked that goal at the end, and I think there's only going to be one winner here.
You and me both, David. You and me both. And anybody who saw my ridiculous celebration when we scored will have been fully aware of what my emotions and my beliefs were at that stage. How I didn't do my hamstring is only a saving grace, I'll tell you that. But no despair. I disagree with you on despair. There's no despair around here. It was a monumental effort. A monumental effort at the end of a monumental season. And I do understand that losing is losing, but I don't think I've ever felt as proud of a group in losing as I did last weekend, yeah.
Like, I know it's a bit wishy-washy now, over, but like, how would you reflect on it in terms of the season and how it's been for you? And like the amount, the travelling that you must have done as well, but everything, juggling and all the rest of it. I know you were saying earlier in this, only a few weeks ago, you know, it's probably been easy in the sense of training is almost taking care of itself because you've been doing well and stuff. But from yourself and your point of view of even you as a manager and what you've been through, how would you reflect on it?
Yeah, look, it was hectic, and if I'm completely honest about it, the positive results, if results hadn't been positive, I don't know, would you have been able to kind of sustain the energy levels and all that kind of crack that was required to do it? But the one other thing I'd say aside from the results is, and again, I'm kind of separating how good of a group they were to work with from the results, whereas in reality, that's probably not the case, because a group are always easier to work with and nicer to work with when results are positive. So there probably is a little bit still to do with results, even in that respect. But genuinely, there was such a brilliant group there this year that you were energised coming to training, you were energised coming away from training. There was a brilliant balance of determination and competitiveness with crack and enjoyment, a perfect balance of it. And every the driving and everything else is that bit easier when you've got that chemistry, you know.
And that chemistry and those traits are going to be what's going to determine whether how good your end of season night is at the weekend. We are joined by Mr. Gavin Cooney. Have you got your invite yet, Gav? Have you picked out your Neil Diamond song of choice?
I've got absolutely nothing through the post. I'm patiently waiting here.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to sort out that we can get mileage for it so we can kind of carpool, go down together and actually make a weekend of it. I'm guessing these invites are in the post, Shane, because obviously this isn't going to be something that you'll want to enjoy without us.
Yeah, I just to get our listeners up to speed, I mistakenly sold it to you as, listen, David, this will be right up your street, because I do. I know you like an old Rebel song every now and again, but unfortunately, you jumped to the conclusion that we were going to have a Neil Diamond tribute band, which is not quite the case. Not quite the case. A little bit of a different vibe. But no, it should be right crack. It was kind of pulled together as an idea late in the day, really, to be honest, which we just start firing around a few messages on Sunday that it'd be a fucker just to leave the season, as an end as last Saturday. We're going to get everybody, players, staff, committee, supporters, all down kind of 7-ish Friday night and have a bit of an awards due from 7 till 9. And then we've got a good Irish Rebel band jumping on and playing away after that, which should create a good old atmosphere, yeah? Really, really looking forward to it.
I look forward to the ensuing social media storm once you're... two bottles of Boomers in your hand on the table, belting out Grace.
Sounds pretty accurate, to be honest.
Shane, can I ask? I mean, I saw the FAI's social media channels pick Roy Keane out in the crowd. Did he come down to the dressing room at all?
No, that wouldn't be Roy's scene now, as you can imagine. We got word, Handsome Bob, the famous Handsome Bob, stuck his head into our dressing room about an hour before kickoff into the management dressing room and says, just got a text from Roy there, he's landing in this evening. He says, I just said I'd let you know. And one of my management staff did decide to throw it out there. Jesus, Bob, he'd never fancy coming in and saying a word or two, would he? And Bob Tuscull, Bob just says, nah, I don't think we'll ask the question there. So, but look, fair play to him for getting to the game.
How many games has he been at? Because maybe he's a bad look on him. Don't let him back.
No, we won the last day he was there, definitely. No, he's been to three or four, I'd say, over the course of this season, all right. So he has. Now I saw the photo myself. He couldn't have made much more of an effort to hide under that peak cap, could he? I'm surprised he could see where he was going. It was so far pulled down.
He's even robbing your stick as well. Be wearing the nice hat, you know.
Shane, can I indulge my inner Jake Humphrey and ask, like, what did you learn about yourself as a manager across the last year? All those dark nights traveling and so forth.
Yeah, I'd say one of the things I've probably learned is. And maybe this is a little bit with age influenced me, or maybe it's just the season having to the way the season went. I'm now more and more and more, and that's why I don't know. I like anybody who, unfortunately for them, follows me on Twitter will have seen me tweeting out the Steve Kerr clip from during the week, and that might sound a bit Americanized and a bit fancy, you know, a bit airy fairy, but like he said it at exactly a time where that was the conclusion. Your question is basically answered in the Steve Kerr clip, which is. I'm not all that sure that it's about tactics and shape and stats and all that. All the things I used to think were the really important things. Like,
Whoa. Really?
I know. It's just creating the right mood around the place and creating a group, creating a bond between a group and a group that are willing to go to war for each other and just having smiles. Now, again, I keep saying it. It's chicken and egg. I realised there was smiles on faces because there was results, and then there was results because there was smiles on faces. But there is so much to be said for having a happy camp. Like, my assistant manager, Fran Rocket, like, he'd be the first to say, like, in his training sessions, there's not, like, massive technical, tactical detail in there. So there's not. But, like, he has them eating out of the palm of his hand. They love it. They love it because it's all small-sided. It's all high tempo. And more importantly, he's nuts. Like, he is nuts. And he's, like, you think I would pride myself in having energy and enthusiasm. But I'm, like, feckin' 2 out of 10 compared to him. Like, he's just ridiculously energetic and enthusiastic and kind of in your face in a good way. And, like, getting all of that right, like, that's... Okay, we do, like, I'm not throwing the other stuff out. We played a different shape than pretty much every other team in the division. I think that might have helped us and might have fed into the success to a certain extent. But if you're asking me to put the things in priority, the number one was just the feel, the vibe. I hate the word vibe. What can I, the atmosphere around the group was just, we got that bang on, both in terms of recruitment and then how we built it once we recruited them. And that, above all else, is probably what stood to us the most, Gav, yeah?
Yeah, and then it must be hard though. Like, it's not just a manager that can create that. I don't mean at all to do down your work at all or take away from it. But like, I'm sure like that would have been ambition in every job you've worked in and every job any other manager works in is to create the right atmosphere. But it's so contingent on having the right players there, even having the right backroom staff, even having people around the club that can contribute to that as well. Like, when you hear about managers and clubs being a good fit and so forth, even culturally, that's maybe where that actually kind of materializes itself.
Yeah, and look, you say it would surely have always been a aim, but you go on these coaching courses, Gavin, one of these kind of theories that you're taught on coaching courses is your period of priorities. And like, you know, we probably all as managers have the same 15 priorities, but you know, which are the five at the bottom of the pyramid that you're not placing as much emphasis on, as opposed to which is the one at the very, very top of the pyramid that is the thing you put, you know, foremost above everything else. I don't think I ever would have put chemistry at the top of the pyramid. You know, I might have put it in the middle of it somewhere, whereas literally this year, chemistry was absolutely top of the pyramid. And, you know, when things go as well as they do, then you're obviously kind of looking at it and thinking, right, I need to keep chemistry at the top of the pyramid from now on. Look, there's a lot of things that fed into it. You know, I do think we signed extremely well. We had almost no misses when it came to the signing. Almost every player we brought in made a massive contribution at some point or another. A couple of the young players who came through probably surprised us. like you had us now. I think I might, I don't know if I've mentioned this before, apologies if I have. We our under 19 player of the year last year is a guy called Tiernan O'Brien. Tiernan was playing in the 10, and if I'm completely honest, would have been regarded in a similarish manner to most 10s, as in technically excellent, but maybe a little bit lazy and not defensively tuned in. And he's essentially gone and done exactly what Ryan Manning did. So he came, you know, came into the first team environment this year, quickly realised that, you know, A, we weren't playing a shape really that accommodated a 10, and B, the battle for positions up there was a bit much, and decided he was going to reallocate himself as a right wing back. If you had told me before, as pre-season started, that Tiernan O'Brien was going to be a success at right wing back, I would have told him, not a hope in hell. And he's been outstanding for us, absolutely outstanding for us. You've got guys like Keane Brown who have come in from junior football, now granted, you know, the top, you know, his side won the FAI Junior Cup and the whole lot, but like, not, you're always kind of careful of praising your fucking players too much for fear that you're drawing too much attention on them and others will swoop, right? But if I'm being completely honest, like, Keane Brown has 100% the capability of doing a league race here. Like, Keane Brown is 100% capable of going from non-league football to European football within 3 seasons. No problem to him whatsoever. Yeah, he's been outstanding. Absolutely outstanding for us. He really, really has. So look, there's lots and lots of different bits and pieces that feed into it, really, Gav. But it certainly made it a very, very, very enjoyable year. And like, I don't know whether I'm getting older and wiser, or I don't know if it's just because there wasn't a huge amount of pressure on us. But I was honestly able to say to them before the game, I can handle defeat today. I can handle defeat so long as we perform. I can handle defeat so long as we perform. And that's why there was such a sense of satisfaction at the final whistle. Even to, if the game had finished 1-0, wouldn't it quite have been the same feeling? But by finishing 2-1, we gave them their moment. We gave the supporters their moment. That reaction when we got the goal, that made a world of a difference. There's a world of a difference between losing that game 2-1 and 1-0, you know?
Yeah.
Well, it's now on the same time as our award ceremony, so it'll probably be on a screen in the background and we'll be glancing up at it through Bulmer's tinted glasses, David, I would say. But I certainly am intrigued by it. I am intrigued by it. From our point of view, it's just a bit annoying. We would like both of those sides to be in the Premier Division. That is what would work best for Cove Ramblers, but obviously it is, I would think, going to have the outcome of that match is going to have an effect on our fortunes one way or another.
I was going to say, just in pure, who's going to be available for you? Yeah.
There's pros and there's no cut and dried here. There's no team that we're cheering for. There's pros and cons for us for Waterford going up, and there's pros and cons of Waterford being in our division, and there's pros and cons for Cork being in our division. So we just have to kind of see how the cookie crumbles after it in that sense, you know.
And there is also another game to finish off the season. Probably the big one. This is always a big week. I know obviously there's like media days and all that are happening. Like, I know Gav, you were at in Phibsborough for the Bowls, and I'll be doing a few bits with on Pats. But even there is still a little bit of excitement around the place, and I imagine there's so much pressure now on Bowls as well, because obviously with the Europe and the way their season kind of petered out. I was with James Clark yesterday for an interview that I run, and he described it just as the way the season finished as a punch in the gut.
Yeah, and I was looking at it, like, Bowes finished sixth like they did last year. I think they're 12 points better off. Like, it is kind of mad that they didn't at least improve one position. But at the same time, they were in such a strong position after the first 2-3 months of the season. You're thinking, God, are they actually title contenders? And Afolabi hadn't actually hit his kind of, you know, really hot goal scoring streak at that point. But yeah, really tailed off the away form being a massive problem. And yeah, it probably does. Europe probably does put a bit more pressure on them for this cup final, you'd have to say. Declan Devine was kind of talking away from that kind of thing. It was just like, no, it's about winning the cup, and it is. But at the same time, I don't know if it's the same amount of pressure that was on 2 years ago, because that in that final against Pats 2 years ago, there was a real sense that that was the last chance for that Bowes team. Obviously, there was so much turnover. Obviously, Georgie Kelly was now, unfortunately, he was only half fit for the final. He was moving on. Keith Buckley was moving on, going travelling. There was a whole load of other players who were leaving. Obviously, Long stayed, but like finally, that much turnover finally got to him, and he was gone by what, about two-thirds of the way into the following season, possibly earlier. So there was a real sense that that was the last chance for that Bulls team. It doesn't really feel like that this time around, although there is a sense of, you know, justifying the better work that happened this season and not letting it undermine, not letting that poor end undermine things. Obviously in the cup final is coming up. And just to add exactly what you say, this is such a great week. Like from a media point of view, it's just like there's so many media days, there's so many people who are available for interview. Generally, I know probably wasn't the last same, this wasn't the case with Shelburne last season, but definitely this season, like players seem very open, clubs seem very open to doing things. And it's great. And it's just like there's a whole week of build up. There are kind of posters around town. You do get the sense that the FAI are making a much better job of pushing it. We'd be pretty optimistic, I think, that we're going to get a record crowd. Is it over 41 that they have to break for the record crowd off the top of my head? I think they're at about 35. They're at about 35 yesterday evening. So yeah, like it's a showpiece occasion. I think it's been, in the last few years, it's been given that kind of status befitting that, going back to, geez, maybe 2019, that Rovers final that they won, that felt like the first real of the kind of make the FAI Cup a showpiece occasion, and like,
because that was like 33 or something like that.
Yeah, and obviously 2020 was behind closed doors, a massive crowd in 2021, and just looking back, like, I mean, when Declan Devine in charge of Derry when they won the cup against Pats, there was only something like 12,000 of that match, like, which is crazy to think about. So you know, the big crowd this game is partly down to the FAI pushing things. It's primarily down to the two clubs who've massively expanded their fan bases. And yeah, will it be a classic match? Probably not. Cup finals rarely are, but it's an occasion to really look forward to.
David, speaking of the media coverage, I'm just wondering, when can we expect your 50,000 word piece on your trip to the Greyhound races at Harold's Cross with Danny Grant and Mark Doyle?
Why did you pick those two?
I don't know, I just pulled them out of my arse.
I was going to say, for some reason, you mentioned about Greyhounds. Don't mention Greyhounds in this podcast, by the way. Yeah. Otherwise, Gab is going to go off. it is going to go off. What was that car shooting down in Cork with Cars Like Venus?
Or Yahal. Yahal.
Yeah. But it's clear to see, though, Shane, on your new vibes metric, Bulls are struggling here.
true, and
like, considering we did ask you for a tactical breakdown here or matchups, which now all of a sudden is irrelevant. So we know, like, excuse me French, but it's a giddy week, it doesn't matter the bollocks. So like, but what are you looking at in terms of, from a coach's point of view, or your hat on, or if you're like opposition Douglas, what are you looking at in terms of the key matchups here?
Yeah, I think because I would expect both teams, I know Pat's flirted with three at the back in a couple of games, I think they used it recently against Rovers, but in reality you would expect both teams to line out with a version of 4-2-3-1 or 4-3-3, whichever way you want to call it, which means it really, really is individual battles all over the field, or at most little kind of mini unit battles. I mean, the ones I'm looking at, I suppose the ones that would most excite me is the two Bows wingers up against the two Pats fullbacks. I think that is going to have a massive bearing on the game. That's assuming Danny Grant keeps his position ahead of Ali Coote, which I do think he will do. So you're potentially looking at a scenario where you've got, you know, Danny Grant, a player who was, you know, before he went away, the hottest player in the league, who's kind of rediscovering his form a bit in the last couple of weeks, up against, I think, the roundly agreed young player of the year in Curtis. I think that has the potential to be a brilliant battle. And down the other side, maybe not quite as much X factor, but still a fair one, and two probably more slightly proven assets in Dylan Connolly going at Anto Breslin. I just think they're, for me, if those two fullbacks can keep the Bows lads quiet, or possibly even pin them back and get them going in the opposite direction, I think that that will certainly be key to it, in my opinion. The midfield battle is fascinating. It's one that I fear for Bows a little bit in, without the obvious loss of Keith Buckley, but maybe they can prove me wrong. What would be your good? Do you think it'll be McDonald or McManus will get Buckley's jersey? I would imagine the other two are going to be Flores and Clark either way. But who gets the Buckley position? He's just such a loss. He really is.
See, that's it, because in terms of, we talk about it in terms of the intangibles, but, you know, the character side of things, just having that player beside you where other lads would look at and say, yeah, we want him there. McDonald's, like, McManus, I want to actually have a look at the last game, but that kind of might have...
McManus played the full 90 against Cork, which is a good sign for him.
Yeah, like that would lead me to maybe give him the edge. But there's been other times where McDonald has started ahead of him in other games. I'm even thinking of bigger games where they were still on the line for qualifying for Europe. You wonder though, was Devine probably thinking, well, do you know what? Probably Europe is out of our hands here. We're not going to get it. And would that be in his head where he's thinking, I'm not going to play him? Because... But then there's been games where McDonald's come on and he's been one of the first hooked and McManus has come on for him. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, you see, I get your argument. The only thing is, I'd flip it the other way. I'd be thinking, has he turned around to McManus and said, maybe along the same lines as you, maybe he's thought, right, Europe's kind of out here. This is more a case of being a rehearsal for the final. Listen, going to throw young McManus in. This is your audition. Let's see how you do. And then he does very, very well.
But then, do you know what? I don't think so even that, because... I think if he was going to do that, like, McDonald, I don't think is so imperative to that Bowes team where he would be totally rested for a game like that. Do you know what I mean? If it was Afolabi, you'd say, right, that makes sense. They don't want to risk losing their main goal threat or maybe a winger or even a defender or whatever. Do you know what I mean? But McDonald, I don't think, is so imperative to that team, even without Buckley, where they're like, right, we cannot risk losing you. So maybe it would be more with a view of actually... we want to get McManus with the speed. Not that he needs with the speed, but just another 90 minutes. Do you know what I mean? That's probably how I'd actually... If I was looking at it from the point of view of that way, like where... Like I could be wrong. There could be Bowes fans, and hopefully there are Bowes fans listening to this.
I would like to be... And this is the position I found myself in last weekend, which is exactly the way I wanted it was. You would like your midfield... You would like to be going into the game with your midfield nailed down. No decisions. You know a week out from the game who your midfield three. It's just such an important area of the field. You know, there's no doubt they're the three that are starting for me in this game, and there's no question marks there. And that, for me, look, maybe I'd be proved wrong and proved a fool here, but I would think that's exactly how it is at Pats. I mean, I would find it hard to believe that it's anything other than Lennon, Forrest or Levy as the midfield three for Pats, and that's... Fuck me, that's a good midfield three.
Well, see, that's the thing, because even if you're assessing that three, like... That tree from Pats, you've got like the energy and just
the balance. Yeah.
You've got the energy of Levy and obviously left sided, and you can get around the pitch. You've got Forrester, who when they need it, if they're under pressure, can just control things if he wants. And then you've got Lennon, who can just murder somebody if he feels they need it. Do you know what I mean? And don't get me wrong, he can still get you out of the game. It was a little bit and get you out from the back. I think he's improved, but like that balance of that, I think that of that Pats midfield and just a bit of the overall strength of it, and just even as well, just a bit of the confidence and form that could be in it. Just, I think, would have the edge.
Yeah, and look, it is. It's that midfield unit. Look, we'll probably get on to predictions after a while, but that midfield unit for me is what would tilt it in Pat's favour. And look, like more often than not, the team that does win the midfield battle is the team that comes out on top. Now, look, like Pats aren't exactly massively possession-based under Daly, to be fair to them. So they're not. And normally, like, this is one of the intriguing things for me is normally you know what the flow of the game is going to be in that, you know, one team is the team that establishes possession and the other team are the team that will, you know, be happy enough to allow them to have possession and look to play on the counter maybe a little bit more. Whereas... like, that's not really the case this year. You know, neither of these sides are massively possession-based. It really is, like, kind of very, very well matched in that sense. But look, coming away from that, like, it's hard then to get away from the obvious conclusion or the obvious third point in battle being which centre-back pairing can keep which centre-forward quieter. And that's where it maybe swings back in Bowes' favour a little bit because, you know, the job that the Pats centre-halves have in keeping Afolabi quiet is, you know, on, you know, fair enough to say that that's definitely a tougher gig than you would imagine it is for the Bowes centre-halves to keep Carty quiet, who hasn't maybe the same profile. Again, assuming it's him that starts at centre-forward. Bowes look like been down one at centre-back as well, I think. So Keane Byrne probably... Yeah, so Keane Byrne looks like he will start. Now, I'll be honest, he spent the first half of the season in our division and I was seriously impressed with him. I think he's a fine player. And I think if Bowes win the game, I think man of the match is either Afolabi or Keane Byrne. So even though I've come to the wingers first and the centre midfield battle first, I actually think for Bose to win the game, it has to be about their centre back pairing getting the better of Carty while Lafalabi gets the better of who we're looking at, Redmond and Norman. So it's an interesting one, yeah.
Well, you've mentioned Jonathan Lafalabi there. He was speaking yesterday, Gav. You were at the media day. You've spoken for what, 7 or 8 minutes, was it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we were out. I went to Dynamite yesterday with a load of the Bose players up for interview. Just briefly on Keith Buckley, they're in a very heavy left leg brace. Did do press, in fairness to him, and like times you felt bad asking him about the injury that he suffered against Pats a couple of weeks ago. It's very serious. Like, I mean, I've never heard of anything like it. He did it. He ruptured his ACL and then tore his MCL off the bone. I've never heard of those two things happening at the same time to the same person. So, look, he has got great mental strength. So hopefully he'll be back. He says he won't rush things, but you know, he faces a pretty long, tough journey, and it'll be tough for him obviously to be on the sidelines, particularly this week and at the weekend. But Aflabi will definitely be between the lines. And yeah, I sat down with him for a few minutes at Dailymount Park on Monday. John Aflabi, thanks a million for chatting to me.
Yep, happy to be here. Yeah.
What's the main emotion ahead of a cup final? Is it nerves? Is it excitement? Is it all manner of things?
You need to try your best to keep nerves over. Sometimes it can help you, sometimes it doesn't. But we're all very excited as a team to be in there, and we know how good we can be as a team. So we've been good in a lot of patches this season, and we just need to bring that out again on Sunday.
Yeah, have you all your tickets sorted? Are many people on to you all week?
Yeah. Family members, friends, the lot. Everyone's asking for tickets. Yeah.
So. We have a big family crowd there.
It's just 6 of us all together as a family, and then family, friends as well, uncles, cousins, all that. So yeah, everyone be there.
Yeah. And are you one to kind of visualise finals, as in how do you think it'll go? Would you even like close your eyes at times and this week and visualise what it'll be like with the winner's medal around your neck?
Yeah, no, I do that before every game. Friendlies, cup games, league games. Mm. As a striker, it's always good to visualise a couple of days before the match. Think about goals you might be able to score, and you'll find that a lot of them may come true.
Yeah, you have managed to score plenty of goals this season. Maybe can you talk to me a little bit about your development and maybe the parts of your game that you've worked hardest at this year?
Yeah. So I would say I was before the season, I didn't have a full season of football under my belt, so it was good to get a run of games and to get a style of play that I know I'm comfortable with, and it was good to have a manager obviously backing me and staff that were willing to help my game to bring everything into one piece, because I feel like they were in pieces. I was playing well and I managed to bring that all into one, so obviously long may that continue, but it'll definitely be down to the staff and the teammates that I have to recognise areas of my game I could improve, and then for me to be able to quickly put it all together as well is obviously a good trait to have.
Was there a moment this season when it all clicked for you?
I got a couple of goals at the start of the season, but it wasn't enough to really make a name for myself. And then after the break, I scored against Shamrock Rovers, and I went on a long scoring run that was involved with records and stuff. So it's something that you never imagine would happen, but it did. And I would say that Shamrock Rovers goal was the start of a new me almost.
Yeah, your manager was singing your praises next door when we were talking to him, and one thing he mentioned was your mentality, the fact that, you know, physically you're so strong that you don't get your fair share of fouls. He was saying that, you know, Dean Williams can be tackled in the same way as you have, but you don't get the foul, whereas he might. And then just that mentality not to react. Is that something that you've had to work on?
Yeah, I think I quickly realised that I won't be getting as many fouls as other people, or referees might see it as I'm a big lad, so I should be able to take it. So I don't get that view, because a foul is a foul. But at the end of the day, I think I do give to the defenders a lot of physical challenges. So for them to give it back to me, I guess, is fair. And I just have to try to get on with it and play to the whistle, as they say. So yeah, don't stop until you hear the whistle, basically.
Yeah, one of your direct opponents this weekend will be Joe Redmond, your old teammate from Joey's. I mean, I guess you go back a few years. Do you have any memories of playing with him?
Yeah, he was also a leader as well from a young age. We won a lot of trophies together at, at Joey's. He went away to Birmingham then when we were both 16. So you can see he's grown a lot. He's become a proper player, and he's been very big for Pats the last couple of years. So delighted for him. And but we're gonna have to park the friendship for maybe 90 or 120 minutes on Sunday, and then after that we can shake hands.
Yeah. Have you a couple of messages been going back and forth ahead of the cup final?
Not really. We've kind of kept that at a distance, and he's a good friend of mine, but in the football industry, I'd say. If we speak, it's about football.
Yeah. Did you kind of expect him to become the kind of player that he is already?
Yeah, he always had those traits. Always doing extra work. Loves the gym, stuff like that. You could see what he wanted to be, a real leader, and he had the traits to be. He was winning trophies at a young age, to be fair, and captain in his Ireland age group as well, so he was always going to be that type of player.
Yeah. Any stories of him that you remember from when you were travelling the country and beating all around you with joys?
Nah, I just know he had his braces back then, I would say that. He's lost his braces now, straight teeth, so he looks the part now. But other than that, he always led us around the place when we were at St. Joey's together, and he was good, yeah.
Yeah. On the cup final itself, does the fact you're slightly disappointing finishing the league and just missing out on the European place, like, does that add a bit of pressure going into the cup final for you guys?
I wouldn't say so. Personally, I would say we wanted to win the cup anyway. Once we won a few games, once we went past a couple of rounds, there was no point in stopping. Sure, you don't want to come up short in the cup anyway. It's always good to have silverware, and I know these group of players that I'm with now, we're all hungry to get silverware. So I know we were unlucky in the league, and we didn't perform to the levels we could have towards the end of the season to make sure we were in there. And it ended up coming to the last day of the season where it wasn't in our hands anymore. So yeah, now the cup is something that we always had our eyes on, and there's no game that you want to lose, so we'll waste that now.
Yeah, your performance level stayed up and it earned you a senior call-up. Maybe talk to us a little bit about that experience, what it was like in the squad and what you made of the standard around you.
Yeah, it was an unbelievable moment for me to get called up to the Ireland squad. Something that you dream of, even though I wasn't involved in the squad on the match day. It was still something very, very big for me, and it showed how good I've played this season. Hopefully I get one in the near future, or just at any time, really. Be happy to represent the country and put that top on, but for now I just need to keep my feet on the ground and work on myself and make myself better and stay on the score sheet as much as possible, or as often as possible, and see what happens from there.
Were you nervous or daunted going into that squad the first day you were called up at all, given the standard of player, or is it the kind of thing that you take in your stride?
Yeah, you'd have to take that in your stride. You know, you're there for a reason, so I wouldn't be one to shy away from a challenge. And I played with a lot of them as well, from under 21s. The majority of the squad there now is players that Stephen Kenny already had. So, I played with a lot of them, and it was just like meeting old friends again.
Lastly, John, thanks for your time. Is this the biggest game you'll have played in this weekend?
I would say so. I would say it's the biggest game I've ever played in.
Amazing. Something to look forward to. Thanks a million.
Okay, so that was Jonathan Afolabi chatting. Interesting hearing his thoughts about visualisation, even if I can say it correctly. Now, there'll be some Shamrock Rovers fans who might have visualised Rory Gaffney possibly leaving. There'll be definitely some people at Derry who would have imagined he was going to be wearing red and white next season. That's not going to happen. He has agreed to a one-year deal with Shamrock Rovers. Also, understanding as well that Jack Bourne is now being offered a contract as well. So, a kind of scenario where things have obviously been, there's definitely been stuff happening there behind the scenes over the course of longer than a year. And some of that public tension, or some of that private tension, has become public when you listen to Stephen Bradley talking over the last little while. But I suppose, Gav, the prospect then of Rovers now that they are champions, and now that there are maybe some of those budget issues can be resolved slightly, that they will have Rory Gaffney leading the line more than likely. He's probably still the best player to play in that system that Stephen
Bradley has. He's been so important for them, hasn't he, the last couple of years? From the day he joined and since the day he returned, he's been absolutely vital for them. So keeping hold of him is massive. And particularly, as you reported on the side yesterday. Keeping hold of him at the expense of potentially going to your nearest title rival is absolutely enormous. And all of a sudden, like, you read, Rovers were probably always going to win the league this year from, you know, from, I say always, for the last 6 weeks, 2 months, it's really looked like they would get it done. And then when you heard Stephen Bradley's comments a couple of weeks ago, obviously there was the curious stuff about Chels having the biggest budget next year. I'm really not sure that's accurate, but...
they might not even have the same manager to spend it. We haven't even got onto that about Damien Duff.
We'll get to that. But then you're thinking, God, are they going to... Is this four in a row? Is this going to be it? But it now looks like they're in a pretty strong position to go and build again, to go and, you know, for the drive for five, for want of a better phrase. And Bradley's been the one talking about it. And even little things like the stuff against Cork City about how it's poor from them not to give a guard of honour. I really feel that was a message to his players for next season. You know, I really felt like that's just another little keeping, like, throwing a few coals in the fire to keep that motivational fire burning ahead of next year, you know. So, but obviously, you know, we talk about those motivation things. Budget and player recruitment is more important than all that. So if they've obviously kept hold of Gaffney, that's massive. Definitely seemed that Bradley has won whatever battle he's had to win around that at the club. And there'll probably be more recruitment coming. And what's your read on the Byrne situation? Because you're much better connected to this than I am. Do you think he's likely to stay, or could it be a farewell?
I don't know. That's the truth of it. I think he could go to... Well, I know Pats are one of the clubs who've shown a keen interest in him. I think it'd be one of them where if he makes a decision and informs Rovers that, do you know what, he's going to go somewhere else, you would imagine every other club who want to try and challenge for the league will be making a play for them. Don't miss me anything formally from Shells, and obviously I kind of referenced it in one of the pieces that went up this morning about it, that maybe if that situation with Damien Duff, which is another interesting aspect to the off-season, they have to see what happens there, because obviously he went and kind of explained that, well, he hasn't been, nothing's been sorted for his contract. That could possibly, I don't know, not muddy the waters, but give Jack Bourne something else to think about. My understanding of it is that I don't think he's going to make a decision in the next little while. I think he could kind of maybe take his time with it. And I don't know, it's just an interest. I don't know. It's just kind of. I'm still not 100% sure. Like, I don't know what the story would be in terms of, like, obviously Rory Gaffney staying on will be a big thing. But look at references as well. Like, it was only after the season went on this year, and his own body was feeling good and he felt good himself, that he decided he was definitely going to be staying on and playing for another year. Do you know what I mean? Like, he had kind of thought, well, do you know what, by all accounts, as if he could have been actually time to maybe finish up, but because of the nature of how the season went and how he was performing, he felt now good to go for another year. And obviously Rovers did as well, and Derry did, and others, and O'Gall would have been interested. I'd be curious from your point of view, Shane, as a manager, like, and I know now obviously, like, the vibe king, like, two players like this stay on to a team who've just won four in a row, want to win five, players trying to come in. Is that a huge thing for a dressing room, or would a dressing room, even the quality of those players, would a dressing room who have had that success still feel as if they can just rock on from it?
Yeah, look, I suppose when it comes to assembling a squad or reassembling a squad, there's, in my opinion, there's always what I refer to as a domino player. So there's a player who I'm thinking, or I know in my heart that if I get him over the line, and we get that player announced, the rest will start to fall in place then after that.
I know what you mean.
So, like, two examples for me would be, like, that would have been the case this season with Jack Doherty. You know, we announced very few signings up until I think it was 12th of December or something like that. We announced Jack, and then everything kind of started to fall in place very, very quickly. The players who were on the fence, they see a player of that quality there, and then they want to be part of that. When we won it with Wexford, it was all about tying down Danny Furlong for the second season, and that you end up probably paying a bit of a premium for that domino player, if that makes sense. You know, you maybe go play slightly over the odds so that it does have the knock-on effect. And look, I think as top class and all as Rory Gaffney has been, and I think his return, certainly the return they've got from Rory Gaffney, mainly because of minutes, has been far greater than the return they got from Jack. I still think Jack is that domino player at Rovers. I still think he is that domino player at Rovers. Mm-hmm. I think if Jack signs up for another year and people believe he's going to be back fit and healthy, I think nobody at Rovers for a moment believes that they are not going to win the title again. I think Jack signing for Derry, if it ever happened, would all of a sudden tilt that balance. So look, it's an absolute no-brainer. I throw in the caveat of being fit and healthy, which obviously has been a struggle for him to get fit and healthy. But
he just recovered from that knee surgery as well. He was in London, wasn't he?
Yeah. But if he is, then he is that domino player for Rovers, or more worryingly for Rovers, for another club if he turned up at another club.
Yeah. No, I wonder, because even with this as well, because like Rovers, I suppose, in terms of say the domino player, like Rovers, I suppose, are in the point where like Gaffney and Bourne, I think, are the main lads who were out of contract. Obviously, Ronan Finn is another, like, he's decided to go and obviously go to UCD, and he's doing his masters part time. And we reported as well last week that Luke Bourne, who obviously is the Shells captain, he's been offered the assistant manager's job. So that's another, like, this is a different kind of merry go round. Do you know what I mean? But like, you kind of wonder as well, like, would say Jack Bourne, wonder in terms of this, like, the domino thing you're talking about, would there be players even outside the league or who would be looking at it and be like, oh well, actually, oh, I won't go there because he's there, I'm not going to get a game. Do you know what I mean? Like that Rovers squad. No, because sometimes that Rovers squad, it does seem, there's sometimes as personalities, you see the odd little kind of like little bit of tantrums. I'm not going to name names, people see them because it happens. But like, that's one of the things that Bradley's done very well, and it's only because they've been winning, clearly. And you're talking about the environment that they've created, clearly it's to do with that. Like, you genuinely don't hear loads of stuff coming out about lads throwing the toys out of the pram when you think about the level of player that's there. Like, Dylan Watts walks into every other midfield in the country and is a forced choice player. Do you know what I mean? Whereas, not that he seems content, but he's one of those players who, like, it's just part of that whole functioning system that seems that Bradley seems to have kind of created. And that's one of the things with everything that's been going on, and even over the last little while here, and that has made this even so much more baffling from the point of view of behind the scenes, because you're thinking, he is so important to keeping that all in place. A new manager will come in and it could be finding it very difficult to maintain that same level of order.
Oh, listen, it's undoubtedly the most impressive part of the job for me is the squad management. That's not to downplay his understanding of tactics or the style of play that he's managed to bring about at the club, but it's just like I look at some of the headaches I had this season with my players trying to keep them happy. Like, holy Jesus, my players have literally, you know, no ego and kind of have to, you know, suck it up based on maybe what they've achieved in the game to date and all that kind of crack. Like, how he handles that dynamic, as you say, without, you know, any major blow-ups or players walking away from the club because they're unhappy with game time, or he's just done an absolutely phenomenal job in that sense, in my opinion. Phenomenal job. I mean, he has guys not making his match day 20 who would start in pretty much any other League of Ireland team in the country. I mean, it's ridiculous. I'd love to know whether his management style around this is, not fear is the wrong word, but has he got the players in a position where they know not to question him because they fear the consequences if they question him? Or has he handled it in a way of, if you're unhappy, you can come and talk to me and we'll have a chat about things? And therefore, he handles it that way and manages to keep them on side with conversation. There's kind of two ways you can go about that, if that makes sense, do you know?
I also think as well, part of with someone who is, and we know this just by, I think, like, you speak various, I would hang my hat on it, but like, their wage bill is considerable. Like, it's going to be close to like 2 million euro. Like, I mean, in terms of the whole budget for the first team, like, there is that element to it as well, which you can't ignore. Like, it's clearly, obviously, he's managing these people as well. They're earning good money as well, do you know what I mean? Like, so, but you still have to manage that. You can be earning good money as a footballer, but, like, it's not going to be the determining thing where if it could be only a couple of hundred euro or 100 euro in the difference where you could go somewhere else and probably know you're going to play every time. It's clearly, like, not the first. You want to be part of a team that is having the success that they're having.
Yeah, and on the money thing, right? The other thing I would say on the money thing is, I never have a problem with a manager who has the most money because he has got himself to a position where his club have the most money, rather than somebody who arrives into a job and has the most money from day one, and then you're kind of saying to yourself, oh, well, look, could he do it if he didn't have the biggest budget? Like, the last two seriously successful managers that this league has had, Stephen Bradley and Stephen Kenny, neither of them arrived at the club where the club had the biggest budget. They brought success, which then had the result of you now having the big budget, if that makes sense. So, look, you wouldn't begrudge him having the budget that he has now. He had to, if you had said to, when Stephen Bradley took over, if you had said to anybody, when you look at the level Dundalk were at the time, and even the level that Cork were at the time when Stephen took over at first, like, my God, you would have done well to predict that they would have ended up being heading for five in a row, you know?
Yeah, just very briefly, one thing that we haven't touched on there, as regards Rovers, like, one of the key parts of Bradley turning things around and then building this incredible success that he's had was sorting out the goalkeeper's position. Initially Bazunu and then Alan Manus. Now, Manus has stepped away, so that's a big piece of recruitment that they need to get right now.
Yeah, no, absolutely, because I think they've kind of spoken about having the like Leon Pauls and stuff and maybe talking about his improvement, but you would think like they're going to have to sort that. That's something that they're going to have to bring in from the outside. Like, it's fairness. So that's enough talk about football. Now it's chat time for some VAR chat. So there's only one place to start, and that's the Premier League. I would be of the opinion, lads, that last night's game was not very good. It was absolutely shit, and that was because of VAR.
In what sense?
Just the whole nature of it. I just the stopping, the how long stuff was taken. I still would be adamant as well that Casado's goal I still don't think he's properly interfering.
Completely. Like he's a mile out from goal as well, Jackson. You know, how is he getting in the goalkeeper's way?
And could they have allowed the goal to stand and sent Romero?
No, I don't know, actually. Probably.
This is where we need someone who knows exactly what the rules are, which is actually somebody who will be in the VAR room. I 100% see the irony of that. So
they could definitely check it if they wanted, yeah.
Yeah. But I'm guessing you watch the match last night, Shane? I'm guessing you did.
I surely did, yeah.
Because also, first of all, your man, the fullback, he should, well, we were talking about it, how a VAR official or can watch that tackle and say it's not a red card when then Romero gets sent off, this is why it's a lot of bollocks. And this is where VAR now, like, but VAR is going to say, and it's going to happen where Sky are going to pretend that, oh, do you know what, maybe give it time. And then before we know it, them and TNT and all the rest of it, there's going to be longer delays, right? You're going to have ads getting sold. This is what's coming down the line. Like, I'm sorry for going all, like, probably 4chan on this and conspiracy, but this is 100% what's going to be happening. Like, these VAR things, it's all going to happen where it's going to end up being sponsored. It's going to just, it is genuinely, like, and yesterday, genuinely, I don't know how, Peter, they were trying to sell it as if it added to the entertainment of the game and all. No, you missed out on Casado scoring an absolutely brilliant goal and then the match becoming an absolute joke. It was absolutely brutal. It was brutal.
But hold on. No, right? No. I think last night's game was a Premier League dream. An absolute Premier League dream, right? Because there are two types of football fans, okay, in my opinion. There's the football fans who love the actual football and are tuning in to see, you know, a certain style of play or you know, tactical battle or stuff like that, right? And let's put me in that camp, okay? I will admit we lost half of a half, okay? We lost the whole second half of the first half, okay, to just one mental decision after another, to VAR, to stoppages, to everything, okay? Up till that point, I thought the football being played by Spurs was outstanding. And I thought Chelsea starting to get to grips with it and starting to find a way back into the game was tactically extremely intriguing. I thought the second half of the first half was mayhem, but I'll come back to that in a minute. And I thought the second half, I found the second half exhilarating, both in terms of the style of play that both sides were trying to implement in the circumstances that they found themselves. It was tactically one of the most intriguing games I have watched. For the second half of the first half, if that makes sense, the bit where I'm saying the game was lost, that appeals to the other kind of football supporter, the one who just loves drama. My wife was sitting beside me last night. I have never seen her so engrossed in a game in my life. She just thought this was all amazing, absolutely amazing. So she did. The drama, the constant, you know, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, but like, I don't know. I thought it ticked an awful lot of boxes.
I thought it was rubbish. I hate VAR. Yeah. No, I didn't. No, I during the first half, I couldn't make my mind up as to whether I was enjoying this or really annoyed by it. In the end, I think I enjoyed it. But look, I mean, it's just the number of stoppages, how long it's taken, the fucking hysterical conspiratorial discourse.
Sorry for that. I didn't realize I did that.
What we're getting in return for all these stoppages and all of that is not the level of accuracy that would make those initial stoppages, etc., commensurate. So bin it off. And it's not possible. It's not possible to get the level of accuracy because these things are subjective. It's nobody's fault. The fault is the fact that the technology exists and there's this constant creep to use it. It's rubbish. Like, and I know people are talking about like it's amazing drama, but like it would have been pretty amazing drama had this just kind of flowed and not taken up an extra fucking half an hour of our night with stoppages and stoppages. Like the great, you know, the Battle of the Bridge. You know, that was the 2-2 when Leicester won the league. That was refereed. Mark Clattenburg talked about, I'm just going to stand back and let Spurs basically implode here. He was completely non-interventionist and it was great drama as well. So the idea that we need the VAR stuff to make the drama, I don't agree with.
No, I'm not saying we need VAR for the drama. I'm saying we need VAR for there to be a dramatic reduction in the amount of refereeing errors. And there is a dramatic reduction in the amount of refereeing errors because of VAR.
But not the elimination of it, and the few that they're still getting wrong.
But how did people think it was going to be an elimination of it? Like, it's been operated.
I know, but
by
they're
humans.
still making big mistakes, and we still have to fucking talk about them all the time. And now they've just got inflected all this hysterical stuff, like Arsenal's really small time statement there at the weekend, like supporting Mikel Arteta, calling for higher standards, etc. Like, it's not worth it. Honestly, please,
but
this is not progress.
But even the stuff yesterday, like, let's be honest. You're talking there about Shane about saying there's two type of football fans. But also, I would say, if you're looking at there's the type of football fans who's looking at what's happening, right? So that tackle from Romero on Fernandez, wasn't it Enzo Fernandez, right? No one reacts to that saying, that's a red card. No one, like, players, 9 times out of 10, everyone will know this, that's a really bad tackle. And if you look at it, like, it's bad, but he's not even going a huge amount of force, right? And he wins the ball, but he does follow through. But, like, otherwise you might as well just outlaw tackling. Right, that's coming into another aspect of it. This is where you're getting into a grey area. But where this incident even ruined the game, even from a sports point of view, is right. Chelsea score perfectly good goal stance because he's 100%. That shouldn't have been disallowed for offside because he's miles out taking the shot. The player who does get out of the way of it is at the edge of the box. The goalkeeper sees it going all the way. There is absolutely no way in a million years that's offside. In terms of how football for years and years and years has been, but they're all now so shit scared and terrified of a fella's ankle being offside that they have to then pull that up. That's why it's nonsense. And then the game gets ruined because you got a man sent off and another instant when you bring it back, which, I'll be honest, if that's not given as a red card in the VAR, you could make your argument for why it's not a red card. Do you know what I mean? It's not a clear and obvious error. And this whole thing so clear and obvious. Sometimes if it's taken 5 minutes to draw these lines together, you might get it right. But if it's not clear and obvious straight away, but then just let it go. Let it flow. But like, it's just really, from a point of view of actually watching it and being when you're at matches, and especially when you haven't got a clue what's going on when you're at these games, it's just brutal, and it adds nothing. It genuinely doesn't. It has not improved football if you're watching it in terms of on telly, because a lot of people do watch football on telly, whatever. It just adds absolutely nothing to it. Absolutely nothing has been added to the football through VAR.
We are getting less referees.
Other than, no, genuinely.
You're telling me Romero's wasn't a rig. I'm in a WhatsApp.
No, but we're hearing. But come here. You're saying less mistakes, but we're hearing more of fucking Dermot Gallagher on Sky then. These fellas, you know what I mean? It's creating a bleeding splinter movement and a whole blue. Like, oh my God, it's brutal. It's just absolutely.
I actually can't believe you don't think Ramirez was a red card. I'm in a WhatsApp group with 6 Spurs fans who all said it was a nailed on red card. We are the Spurs fans. It's a nailed on red card.
But what I'm saying, you say it's a nailed on red card, but let's say, for example, they don't, right? A doggies isn't. That's a red card for me because he's gone 2 foot, right? But with this one, you could 100% make the argument that it's not a red card. That he wins the ball, he's not. Like excessive force, and he follows through. No one on the pitch appeals. That's a big telling factor, I would say, in terms of the initial force of how a fella goes in for the tackle as well. The referee is looking straight at it. He's even thinking, you're telling me these lads, when they say when a tackle is reckless and really out of control, you can make your, this when you slow down, this is why I'm saying, I just don't think it adds anything. It just adds to me talking like a lunatic here, like a dope. And then you'll defend it. And then next week, there could be something totally different where I'll see it from a different point of view. And then you'll see it from... You know what I mean? This is what I'm saying. It's, nothing has changed in football. We're still talking, but we're talking about a different kind of shite talk. It's
but I am defending it from one perspective and one perspective only. The perspective of a manager who wants more correct decisions. And VAR gives us more correct decisions. It doesn't give us a perfect world. But the proof is there. The research is there. How many incidents have ended up being overturned because VAR spotted an
error. But you're also not, and why would you as a manager? Because your job is not there to entertain us to win. But like everyone else watches it for entertainment. And I just think that
100%.
I just think that it gets in the way too much of entertainment at this point.
One of the fellas in that WhatsApp group, our Spurs WhatsApp group, was at the game last night. He said it was absolutely painstaking.
Oh, it would have been, it's horrendous in the ground, all right. Like, I mean, whatever. Exactly. I mean, it's for us watching on TV. And Patrick Coglio, I thought, spoke well after the game. He's too reasonable a man, by the way. The Premier League will drive him mad eventually. He's too... There's something just too... Like, no, unrealistically perfect about this man. I completely right. Come here, just before we go, I did want to ask you about what did you think about their second half tactics? Like, it wasn't backs against the wall. It was like backs against... Get the backs as far away from the wall as you can. Stand high and try.
let's have a crack, mate. Let's be honest. If it wasn't Chelsea and it was a team with actual brains up front to actually score, they were playing Man City. You telling me Man City aren't putting 10 past them against Man City?
Yeah, it was fascinating. I did think it was a form of suicide, but I thought it was an incredibly entertaining form of suicide.
It was brilliant. I absolutely loved it.
I would agree with you there.
The gist of it was the only way to keep us having an attacking threat. So it's a defensive principle, but it's actually set up to ensure that we still have an attacking threat. The biggest problem with it was
Eric
less
Dyer.
The cons. Yeah, yeah.
He hadn't played a game all season, and then Eric, you get on there. You need to do a series of desperate 40-minute sprints for the next 50 minutes.
Spurs could have pulled that off with Mickey Van Den and Christian Romero.
They probably could have.
Yeah, I think they could have pulled it off, but with Dyer there, it was an absolute recipe for disaster. And yet, lads, Son has that chance in 92nd minute to make it 2-2, and Spurs would have held on for the draw.
Bentancur could have, he should have scored. Header, like, yeah. You know? Chelsea were, how many
should Nicholas Jackson have
had? I know Chelsea won 4-1, but they were pretty crap. They were actually they were all right in the after the Odoghi tackle and getting back into the game, but God, they're very unimpressive given all that's spent and given. Pochettino's had a good bit of time to work with them now. Like,
I think they'll come good. Mm. I really think they'll come good.
Nkunku will add a lot when he comes back, but I'm thoroughly unconvinced.
I'm going. Yeah, it's good timing here, seeing as how we started the podcast with me saying the tactics and numbers don't matter anymore, and then me finishing the podcast by saying all of the numbers point to the fact that Chelsea have actually been performing far better than their points tally suggests. I think they'll bounce back.
Right, well, so for more good vibes, tune in next week.
That depends on me. It's not dependent on Pat's win.
Yeah, true.
What are we going to row over next week? We need a good topic to row over next week.
If Bose gets some contentious decision, David will be calling for VAR in the League of Ireland.
Well, remember there wasn't that whole incident a couple of years ago, wasn't there? Remember the, was it the header? Was it
Rory Feely over the line? You know, Hickman.
Yeah.
I don't know from the Arsenal Newcastle experience. I don't know what's over the line or not. I can't figure it out. And I was talking about this on. I did a telly slot on Monday morning on Ireland AM, and they asked me to talk about this, and I somehow ended my talking about it by saying, well, you know, the ball is round. that's some tough insight there.
But Gav, have you not found any of these boys on Twitter who get an orange out and put the orange on the step of their door and show you the picture of the orange from the various angles?
Well, that's what Richard Keys and Andy Gray did. I'd urge everyone to seek out that clip on BN Sports.
It also spawned about 4,000 people making the exact same joke about being in a house party at 5 o'clock in the morning. Which I will also be at if Pats win the cup on Sunday. So until then, lads, take care.
Good luck.